A very good morning to everyone. The first case on this morning's call is number 022061, Commonwealth Insurance against Stoner Container Corporation. Ms. Kidner.
Good morning, Your Honor. Chuck, I'm here on behalf of the Appalachian Stone Container Corporation. Your Honor, this matter arises out of the District Court's grant of summary judgment on statute of limitation grounds, a matter of law in favor of Aon, on Stone's claims for or related to professional malpractice. The court's ruling that Stone's claims against Aon are time-barred as a matter of law, finding that this court, of course, reviews de novo and draws all reasonable inferences in favor of Stone, the non-movement, we submit as incorrect and ought to be reversed for two primary reasons. First of all, Your Honor,
I suggest you might want to keep your voice a little higher. The microphones are great at recording,
okay,
but not terribly good at amplifying.
I'll do my best.
Thank you.
Thank you. First of all, Your Honor, it's our position that the far from being time barred, statute of limitations has not yet even accrued or hadn't at the time that Stone filed a suit against Aon. In fact, at that time, the claims were premature. The district court ruled otherwise, based on a single case decided by a divided panel of the Fourth District, the Illinois Appellate Court. And it's our position that the court ought not to have followed that case, that the case is contrary to established Illinois law, both by the Illinois Supreme Court and the Illinois Appellate Court.
Is it contrary to the law of other states on this issue?
It's contrary to the law of some other states also, Your Honor. The jurisdictions do tend to go different ways.
In other words, there is authority for the position that the intermediate court in Illinois did take. Am I correct?
There is authority in other jurisdictions for that position. There's also several authorities for the position that we're taking here and that, too, would be contrary to Broadnax.
Well, we can't say that the Illinois decision is an outlier, that nobody else in the country has agreed with it or anything of that nature.
We cannot say that no one else in the country has agreed with it, Your Honor. That's correct. What we can say, however, it is contrary to the law applicable to this case and which governs this case, which would be the law of Illinois. In our opinion, it is contrary to both Illinois appellate court cases, numerous cases, as well as the teachings of the Illinois Supreme Court.
Let me ask you this. If Aon had not represented that the all-risk policies covered the loss, would the claims have accrued at the time the carriers first denied coverage?
We believe the claims would not have accrued then, Your Honor, notwithstanding any assurances by Aon. The problem with that accrual date is Aon's liability doesn't depend solely on whether or not it assured us of whether there was coverage, but rather whether or not they indeed procured the coverage that they were supposed to and whether our claim was fully covered. That is a decision or a determination which cannot be made until the underlying lawsuit is resolved. By that I mean all of the claims against the carriers have been dealt with. So in either case, it's our position that when the carriers denied coverage, that did not trigger the accrual date for purposes of this case. And in fact, prior to Broadnax, the district court agreed that there were cases directly supporting our position on this point, as indeed there were two cases in specific, one of which dealt with a predecessor of Aon, who successfully moved to dismiss the claim as premature, because for the very reason that the claim was contingent on there being a finding of liability on behalf of other parties. In Illinois as well, other than the Broadnax decision, the courts have, such as in the Lucy case and the Romano case, which followed Lucy, and by the way, I should indicate as a bit of an aside, Your Honors, that Lucy has been cited and followed by other cases in Illinois, contrary to Broadnax. In any event, the teachings of Lucy, which has been followed, are that a legal malpractice claim, professional malpractice claims in general, do not accrue until it is established that the malpractice plaintiff has suffered injury and that that injury is directly attributable to the conduct of the defendant. Until that time, you haven't established the damages necessary to bring a claim. Now, interestingly, Broadnax agreed that those are the very cases that it ought to have followed. It said that those were the instructive cases. Yet, inexplicably, other than one case, perhaps because it's the case both parties cited, it didn't deal with any of these cases. It simply did not address them. It relied on only one case, again, that was cited by both parties. So Broadnax itself, the majority opinion, and again a 2-1 decision, realized that it ought to have followed these cases, under which our claim would not have accrued at the time that we sued Aon. I say that, Your Honor, because one thing I perhaps should point out is we have had another decision now in the district court. On December 13th of last year, the district court granted IRI's motion for summary judgment, which is brought against us. So we now have a finding that one of the all-risk carriers does not cover this claim. But in any event, at the time that we filed the suit, there wasn't any such finding, and we had not received any adverse ruling. Therefore, it's our position that our claim, as a matter of law, could not have accrued, and the district court was incorrect in following Broadnax and ruling that they did. And apparently, the court concluded that it was required to follow Broadnax. What really ought to have done was follow the body of case law of Illinois, as well as predict what it thought the Illinois Supreme Court would do.
How important is it that you look that we should look to the last decided case in Illinois, which is Broadnax?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, I think...
Broadnax, that court was aware of these other cases, the legal malpractice cases and so on.
I don't know if it was aware of them or not, Your Honor. It certainly didn't cite them.
The dissent in Broadnax cited them, didn't it?
Yeah, the dissent did correctly rely on them. I think the fact that it was one of the later decisions isn't the guiding force here. What is what the general body of Illinois law is. And while it is true that Lucy had been decided, for instance, prior to the Broadnax decision, we've had another case, subsequent Romano, which has followed Lucy and is subsequent to Broadnax. And that case, too, indicates what I've been stating here, which is that the claim would not accrue until we have an adverse finding in damages attributable to Aon's misconduct. I don't think the fact that Broadnax was a recent decision alone should be the guiding influence. No, I don't. I think the decision was incorrectly decided and also distinguishable for various reasons, even if for some reason one were to think it were correct. I believe it wouldn't apply here.
Nothing was stayed during the pendency of this appeal in Judge Koukouras' court. He continued on with the other portions of the case.
Yes, he did.
Is everything now completed in Judge Koukouras' court?
It is not. The status right now, Your Honor, is, as I indicated, Judge Koukouras granted summary judgment in favor of one of the all-risk carriers at issue. He also denied summary judgment both to us and the other all-risk carriers. So presumably those claims would be tried. So there are still outstanding claims with respect to five, I believe, is all risk carriers. Your Honor, we also feel, in addition to the fact that the court improperly concluded that the claims had accrued, even if the court were correct that they had, and even if the court were correct that they accrued on November 15, 1994, which is when Judge Koukouras concluded the carriers denied coverage, it is also our position that the claim still would be timely filed, even if you were correct about that accrual date. And that is because, in this case, we have a situation where there was a particular statute of limitations in effect. A new statute then came into effect, which shortened the period of limitations within which we could file a suit against Aon. That statute could only be applied if we were given a reasonable time in which to sue. It's our position that given all the circumstances in this case, and we believe that the court needs to look at all of the circumstances of the case and do a reasonableness analysis and determine whether or not the time period in which it took for us to file the suit against Aon was a reasonable time period. We believe it was for several reasons. This is an analysis, by the way, the district court never reached, although several cases indicate that this is a question of fact. The district court did not reach it, including as a matter of law, that we were untimely. And so concluding, one of his main points was that we had indicated that the time should be told during which our original claim against one of the carriers, HSB, was pending. And he disagreed with that, that we couldn't obtain tolling based on the pendency of that matter. I'd like to make just a few points about that. First of all, actually, that wasn't our argument. What our argument was that it should have been tolled while we had a judgment against HSB. We had a judgment against that carrier for 2.5 years until this court reversed that judgment in January of 1999. It's our position that, therefore, during that time period, for several reasons, our claim should have been tolled. Whether you look at it as a formal tolling issue, as a claim preclusion issue, as just a matter of having a legally sufficient basis for bringing a claim, once that court ruled in our favor that we had, as a matter of law, full coverage from HSB, we had absolutely no basis on which to sue AON. We couldn't have done so. I notice that this light is on. I'd like to reserve some rebuttal time. Unless there are questions?
Thank you, Ms. Kerr. We'll hear now from Mr. Godfrey.
Please, the court. I'm Rick Godfrey. I represent the AON entities. We think that the summary judgment decision of Chief Judge Koukouras was the correct one. We think that the issue for the court to decide is as follows, because it is fact-specific, but the facts here are not disputed. They are undisputed. Did the district court err in holding that Stone's claims against AON insurance broker had accrued no later than November 15, 1994, and thus were time-barred, when, as of that date, it is undisputed that, one, the relevant insurers did not reimburse Stone for its April 13, 1994 loss, two, the insurers told Stone that there was no coverage, that there was a gap in coverage, three, Stone admittedly suffered injury and damages, and it pled injury and damages in its counterclaims against AON, not contingent, not derivative, but it pled it, four, it pled damages including finance costs and other business effects. Five, it told its auditors, PricewaterhouseCoopers, to justify why it wasn't taking a hit on its books for this loss that it had claims against AON. Six, in July of 1998, in the first Stone appeal before this court, in an attempt to distinguish away a document from AON, Stone told this court and Judge Posner, who is the chief of that panel, that claims against AON have loomed large since 1994. Seven, Stone went out and obtained tolling agreements from every other party, but didn't get one from AON. And then eight, Stone finally filed over 5 years and 8 months after its insurers first declined coverage, claiming in its pleadings that AON had breached the contract, and that arising out of that contract, AON had committed a tort. Under the facts before Judge Koukouras, there was no choice, we submit, but for Judge Koukouras to find, as a matter of law, that Stone's claims were time-barred. The arguments in opposition concede, I submit to you, the correctness of Judge Koukouras' decision. The first argument is that it was premature, based upon the premise that Broadnax is some deviant Illinois authority. Well, first of all...
Yeah, but if you would zero in answering, you know, your own question there, as to why your interpretation would not result in the filing of many unnecessary cases, because the claims would necessarily be filed provisionally, even though courts ultimately would often hold that coverage exists.
Well, it wouldn't at all, and the answer is found in the Illinois Supreme Court decision of Hermitage, which was filed in Indiana Insurance, in which Broadnax did not follow for a very good reason here, but it's consistent with. Hermitage says that in contract claims, or actions based upon contract, or torts arising out of contracts, the time for accrual is the date of the breach. And it says, in answer to the question you just asked, Judge Rovner, the reason for that is, otherwise, you're creating a heads-I-win, tails-you-lose proposition for the other contracting party. If they realize that there is a breach, they then can wait forever before they sue to see what happens with the insurance carrier coverage, and then if they lose that, they then hedge their bet to can sue later. And the court, the Illinois Supreme Court, said that is not the law and that is not permissible. And it is not an unnecessary claim. You must bring that first and foremost. Illinois Insurance, which is the basis, by the way, upon which we originally moved for summary judgment. We didn't move on Broadmax. Broadmax hadn't come down yet. We moved based on Illinois Insurance. Illinois Insurance said, in an insurance brokerage case, it's the date of the breach, the date of the policy that triggered the statute. That was a unanimous decision. Broadmax didn't follow Illinois Insurance because, unlike Illinois Insurance, where the tort claims arose out of the contractual relationship, in Broadmax, the court said they've only got a pure tort claim. They just allege a fiduciary duty breach.
So the appellants are wrong when they quote Hermitage as saying that it was that there the court held that the claim accrued when the circuit court determined there was a defect in the lien and reduced lien claim accordingly.
That's not what Hermitage says. Let me quote what Hermitage says, and I'll give you the citation. Hermitage is an Illinois Supreme Court case, May 18, 1995, and it says on page 3 of the Westlaw site, NLB, let's see, 651 Northeast 2nd, 1135, it says as follows. We note that the limitations periods for tort and contract actions traditionally have been treated differently. For most torts, the cause of action usually accrues when the plaintiff suffers injury. For contract actions and torts arising out of contractual relationships, which is what we have here, because each of their claims against Aon, they say, arose out of this contractual relationship. For contract actions and torts arising out of contractual relationships, though, the cause of action ordinarily accrues at the time of the breach of contract, not when a party sustains damages. And then it gives the reason why, Your Honor, to the question you asked. The reason for this distinction is the concern that plaintiffs will delay bringing suit after a contract is breached in order to increase damages. And they go on to explain it to hedging the bet proposition and concern. In answer to your question, Judge Ripple, about other states, all the other states follow the same principles that Illinois does. And the two cases they cite in opposition, the Massachusetts case and the Missouri case, they've misread those cases. If you read those cases carefully, the reason why there was no accrual and trigger was because the insurance companies didn't deny. They reserved, and they then paid out and defended, and the court said, there's no injury. There's nothing that they were damaged by. But let's just say, Your Honor, you were correct, Judge Rovner, in the premise of the question that you asked. Here we're driven by the facts. You know, I'm bound by the record, and I didn't take a deposition. I think I made only one appearance. But I read everything, and we asked them an interrogatory because they pled damages. They didn't pled contingent liabilities. They pled in specific paragraphs breach and damage. So we said, what are your damages? They knew how to make a prematurity argument. This is in the record at F01147. Let me read you their answer on damages, which they say started in November 1994. Not contingent, not derivative, not an indemnity. Here's what they said. Stone Container objects to this interrogatory, seeking all facts on which Stone's contention is based, on the ground that it is premature. Now, they didn't say leave it there. They said why it was premature. On the ground that it is premature, in that fact discovery is not complete and expert discovery has not commenced. They knew how to make a prematurity argument. But think of the oddity of this case in the Court of Appeals. My client took over 60 depositions. There was a $130,000 bill of costs. We were in court every day. We had to hire experts. No one said to us below when we were doing this with Stone, oh, we don't really have a claim. It's premature. It's unripe. It's non-justiciable. We shouldn't be here. They pled that they had a claim. They pled that they had damages. They pled and answered an interrogatory itemizing five categories of damages that had been incurred starting in November 1994.
Does the record tell us about the reason why there was no tolling agreement insofar as Aon is concerned?
There's a dispute about that. And so I don't know why it was not reached. It's outside of the record and for this purpose.
And you just told us you're bound by the record.
And I'm bound by the record. I could give you what I think the answer is, which is we offered and told them they had a problem and they said no. But they'll disagree with that, and that's not in the record in this sense. In the statement of undisputed facts below, we have a fact statement saying we offered, they said no, they deny that, and so that's where it stands, and so the court did not rely upon that. What is undisputed is they got towing agreements from everyone else. And so they knew they had an issue.
I'm going to take you into Romano and Lucy.
Oh, I was hoping you would.
I'm wondering, you know, how you respond to Stone's argument.
Well, they show exactly what's wrong with Stone's argument. Romano, let's start with the Lucy case. Lucy was Judge Castile's decision. Those are the legal malpractice cases. If you go to the legal malpractice statute, it's a different statute than the statute of limitations for insurance brokers. Let's just start with that. The legal malpractice statute, number one, does not have a per se rule that says you must have an underlying judgment. The Alper case, for example, that we cite explains that. But the statute is fundamentally different because the statute incorporates for legal malpractice the discovery rule. And the reason it incorporates it, Lucy and Romano explained, is because of the unique aspect of an attorney malpractice case, which is if you have to sue right then and there, you put the attorney-client privilege at risk. But also, unlike the professional broker's rule, which recognizes hermitage, which is the cause of action can be triggered at the time of the breach, if it's a contractually based action, that is not the case the Illinois legislature adopted when it adopted the legal malpractice statute, which is fundamentally different. If you look at the language, it's a fundamentally differently worded statute.
Well, help me with this. Aon still doesn't concede that the loss is not covered. Am I right?
We believe that the loss is covered.
Well, until the court resolves it, how has Stone been injured by Aon's conduct?
Well, number one, it pled it. Number two, it says it in its interrogatory answer. It says it had to incur attorney's fees. It claims in paragraph 15 of its invented counterclaim that it had seamless coverage, which it means it was simply supposed to walk into the insurance carriers and get paid.
So the claim against Ian is not necessarily contingent on resolution of the coverage issue?
That's right, because if you look at what they claim here, on their interrogatory, for example, they claim cost of financing, business opportunities foregone, business decisions necessitated because of the delay in the insurers covering them. If you look at the complaint against the insurers, they claim the loss is very simple. The failure to pay the Panama City loss. They're claiming different damages. That's what they pled below. And that's what Broadnax says, and that's what Hermitage compels, and that is what Indiana Insurance says. Let's look at it this way. To overrule Judge Koukouras, you've got to overrule Broadnax, you've got to overrule Indiana Insurance, you've got to overrule Hermitage. You've got to say, because Hermitage said that the cause of action is triggered at the time of the contract breach, not at the time of injury. Injury is irrelevant legally under the Hermitage decision. You have to adopt the per se rule that says, contrary to the statute, contrary to the statute's legislative history, that never can you sue the insurance broker until the underlying action is reached. And you give to Stone the right to abrogate our statute altogether. They told us. We're now entering year 9 since the loss. Under their theory, it's year 13 or 14 or 15 before we get our day in court.
Can you tell me the exact actual damages?
That was a dispute at the time we got out in terms of the monetary amount. I can only tell you what they said in their interrogatory answer and what they said in their complaint. But I'll tell you this, Your Honor. If you accept their argument, the Illinois legislature has no statute of limitations for insurance brokers because it puts in their power the ability to abrogate it. They told this with the insurance carriers. We're now entering year 9 since the loss. Under their theory, year 13 or 14 before our case is resolved. The Illinois legislature said no. It's the date of accrual is when the breach occurs, when the claim is denied. And that's why we're changing it, because we're concerned about proof problems. And so they change it from 5 to 2. One more point on this tolling. There's no authority for that. But think of the oddity of the position we're in.
I was just going to say to you, what an odd position you're in.
Yes. And not because of what we did, because of their tactical decisions. But if the statute had never been reduced from 5 years to 2 years, they would be done, because 5 years from November 15th, 1999 is November, from 94 is November 15th, 1999. So they claim that by having the statute shortened, they get longer time? There is no authority whatsoever for that. One more point on public policy, because that is not unimportant here. Public policy of the statute of limitations is to avoid stale claims. If you read the legislative history, it is to avoid proof problems. The tactical decisions that Stone made do nothing but create proof problems and are completely contrary to the intent of the Illinois General Assembly. We submit that the case should be affirmed. If the court has any further questions, we thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Godfrey. Ms. Kidder now has 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to respond to a few of the points on which Ann's counsel has just made. Perhaps first and foremost is the notion that we have, in fact, pled injury and damages attributable to Aon, and therefore our claim has accrued under the authorities which we've relied on. It's absolutely clear, Your Honor, that our claim against Aon is a third-party contingent claim. We have no claim against Aon for anything, not for attorney's fees, not for anything else, unless they are found liable for wrongdoing. That's something that won't and can't happen until there is a finding of no coverage. Well, again, now there has been that finding, but at the time that we filed the suit. All of the injuries and damages which we've pled, such as attorney's fees, may be things that have been incurred, but may not be attributable to Aon. We can't say that now. They can't say that now. It all depends on what happens in the underlying case. Again, because this is a third-party contingent claim. Therefore, the fact that there may be injury and damages doesn't trigger the accrual period, because we don't yet know that they are directly attributable to Aon's conduct. Another point about certain of these damages, such as the attorney's fees, even if it could be said now that all the attorney's fees we've incurred or some portion thereof are attributable to Aon's conduct, that too wouldn't, under the prevailing authorities, cause our cause of action to accrue. Attorney's fees under the Lucien case and other cases as well are not damages, not for purposes of triggering a statute of limitations and an accrual date. So the fact that we've said there may be injury and damages at some point from someone doesn't change the posture of this case one bit, and doesn't mean that our cause of action is accrued. It does not until we have those damages and they're attributable to their conduct. Another point that was raised was that we informed the auditors that we had claims against Aon. A couple points about that. First of all, actually, we informed the auditors that it wasn't likely that we did. We thought we had coverage. Aon has assured us all along we've had coverage. Aon's counsel just stood here and said he still thinks we have coverage. We thought so then, we still think so now. We did not have a concern that there was no coverage. Although, even if we did have some concern, if there was a possibility, say, that there was no coverage, that too wouldn't trigger the statute of limitations against Aon. Both the Illinois Supreme Court in Jackson, Jordan, and Lucy indicated that even a concern that there may be wrongdoing by the third party, by the broker in this case, even if you think there's a possibility that they could be liable, that's not good enough. You need to establish and prove the damages and it's attributable to their conduct. And in part, Your Honor, I think this is all for a very good reason. As the Illinois Supreme Court recently stated quite clearly in Guzman, the idea of filing provisional lawsuits is something which is abhorrent to the public policy of Illinois. And as the court noted, many times meritless claims are brought and nuisance suits are brought. That doesn't mean that the third party, be it the lawyer or be it the broker, is liable. And in this case, that same public policy applies. Just because the carrier denies coverage doesn't mean the broker did anything wrong. That's something that's resolved in the underlying case. And when it's resolved, and if it's resolved that they did something wrong, then we have a claim. Very briefly, Your Honor, two of the cases mentioned by Aon's counsel, Indiana Insurance for one. Well, as counsel conceded, even Broadnax determined that case ought not be filed. Indeed, it shouldn't. It's a completely different relationship than what we have at issue here. But there are a couple other points about it also. In that case, the court specifically said a reason why they determined the date of accrual, as they did, is no dates were offered by the parties. There were no dates and evidence as to when a claim possibly could have accrued in that case. And finally, in Indiana Insurance, we have the situation which Lucy mentioned, and which is a situation in certain cases. And that is that it was known right from the get-go who was the wrongdoer and that there was damage. That's not our case at all. We don't know. We didn't know, and that's why our complaint hasn't accrued in Indiana Insurance, isn't guiding. And by the way, Your Honor, one last very quick thing. I see the red lights up, and I apologize. The Hermitage case is actually like this case and does fully support us. Until there was a legal determination in that case, substantially reducing the lien, the plaintiff thought that they had, there was no accrual of the statute of limitations. They needed to be damaged, and they needed an adverse ruling by the court.
I think we have the point.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kidder. Indeed, our thanks to both Mr. Godfrey and Ms. Kidder for their fine presentations and briefs in this case. The case will be taken under advisement.